welcome everyone joining us here tonight on the Kings County Radio Club's Technical Question and Answer Net. I am Roy, AC2GS, and I will be your net control operator for this informal net. I will be your host, and Malen KG2C will be your co-host on this exploration into amateur radio technology. The purpose of this net is to provide a platform for discussion and to offer our answers as well as promote a conversation among all participants of this net. The club maintains an archive of these technical nets on its web pages. Also, we offer original articles and reviews on many topics covered during these technical nets. We also publish technical puzzles for our participants to ponder and as a starting off point to discuss important technical concepts. Tonight's TechNet puzzle is posted on our club website. The link can be found on the front page of our website in orange-colored type, but if you would like a simple URL to find it, you can just type puzzle.kc2rc.com. Also, we will be offering a streaming service for those who cannot receive our repeater signal. Just point your browser to stream.kc2rc.com, or if you find it that it's down, use the alternative live.kc2rc.com. This net is scheduled for the second and fourth Wednesday of each month. All of this information can also be found on our club website, www.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club. By the way, an application is available on our website. No question is too simple, no question is dumb. All wisdom begins with the asking of questions. If you have a question, it deserves to be answered. Our format tonight will be to ask for participants to check in only if they have questions or comments for this net. Please give us your name, your call sign, and whether you have a question or a comment. The net will then address each question in order. I will try my best to provide an answer, and Malen KG2C will join in. If any other listener has any further facts or opinions, they will be free to break in with the word comment, and when recognized, offer their knowledge or experiences to us all. If anyone has any suggestions for future topics of interest, please let us know here or use our email address, tech@kc2rc.com. And now, I would like to introduce my co-host for this net, Malen KG2C. Good evening, Malen.
Good evening, Roy, and everyone else on the net. This is Civil Golf 2 Charlie Malen. Very happy to be here, and I'm really looking forward to tonight's tech puzzle. It's something that's of interest to me, and that I use frequently, actually. And I was reading up on additionally today. So, over to you, Roy.
Very good, Malen. So, let me begin the process by asking if anyone out there would like to give their name and their call sign with either a question or a comment for the technical net tonight. Unfortunately, I do not have my cricket sound effect set up, so there'll be no crickets. So I hope instead of crickets, there will be interesting participants for this technical net. Once again, this is Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra with the Kings County Radio Club technical net, asking if there's anyone out there who has any questions or comments for the technical net tonight.
KC2, WTA, Joe in Staten Island.
Hello, Joe. How's life in Staten Island?
Not bad, Roy. Not bad. Sounds a little thin out there right now, but I suppose more people may check in. I just opened the page. I'm looking at the puzzle right now, and I actually do have a question. Back to you.
Very good, Joe. Well, give us your question, and hopefully people will be joining us a little late, and we'll keep the ball in motion. So what's your question for tonight, Joe?
Okay, well, I decided to move up the high-frequency station on the schedule, and I think I might be getting back to it in a couple of weeks. And I have to reconfigure. I have a little longer way to go between antenna and transceiver. And I heard Malen some time ago, a few tech nets ago, talking about the different types of cable that he prefers for high frequency and VHF and LA drop. So the question is actually for Malen, and that has to do with the type of cable he likes to use for high frequency work and for VHF and UHF.
Okay, Joe. Well, Len, you're on. He wants your opinion of HF and UHF, VHF transmission lines.
SWR. Okay, it's gone. I don't know what happened. Well, I have several criteria for selecting what type of cable I use. The first and one that's very obvious and the most talked about is the loss. Different kind of cables have different loss per foot, and that's also dependent on frequency. But typically, lossier cables will be, you know, lossier and higher. Well, all cables are lossier at higher frequency, let's put it that way. So if you're doing high frequency stuff, you probably want a cable with less loss per foot than if you're doing low frequency stuff. So for HF, it doesn't matter as much. So that's one thing you have to consider. The second thing you have to consider is power handling capability. Not all cables can handle high power. If you are going to run an amplifier, like I do, for example, and I sometimes use up to 1.3, up to 1300 watts, you know, I'm not going to push that through an RJ8X, for example. The poor thing is probably going to melt if I try that. So, you know, then I would use a cable that's rated for that much power. Also, if you are going to have a mismatch, ISWR, you want some protection for that. So even if you tune it to show something less than that, you know, you will probably create some heat somewhere along the line, and you want to have a little bit extra safety in terms of how much power the cable can handle. So that's another good reason to do it. And the third one, which I really see as the least, is, well, what's kind of convenient to use? When I started in the hobby, actually, I read that LMR 400 is a very good cable. It's good for HF, it's good for VHF, UHF. It lasts a long time. You can get the direct burial kind, so you can really do anything with it, run it underground, run it on the ground, run it, you know, let it outside in the sun, and it will be fine. One thing that I didn't consider as much is that how inflexible it is. Let me drop. So that cable, basically, you know, you cannot get it in tight spots. You cannot do a small radius turn with it. If you try to do that, you will damage the cable. So, you know, I discovered quickly that it's not a very practical cable for things that are frequently connected and disconnected. So it's a great cable if you're going to do a long run, you know, 100 foot from your shack to the roof, for example, but not so good for a few feet of patch cables that you connect and disconnect because you plug in things differently every day. So for that, I would prefer something that's more flexible. I use RG213, which is similar thickness, but it's much more flexible, much easier to work with. So actually, even some of my line outside is RG213. My longer runs is still LMR 400. But where I start to connect to my lightning protection system and to switches, I'm already, and my equipment inside, I've already transitioned from the LMR 400 that's outside to the RG213 that is inside. That can also handle the high power and also has low loss, not as low as the LMR 400, but is much more flexible and easy to work with. Let me drop again. And then when I want the most flexibility, where I connect my HTs, or when I do portable antennas, being my Arrow antenna, which I use for satellites, or a portable HF antenna, I would use RJ8X. It cannot handle high power, and it has more loss than the other types of cable, but it is lighter. That's a consideration when you're doing a portable operation, or when you hold the antenna in your hand and you don't want some flexible heavy cable hanging off of it and going into your HD. So that's a suitable cable for that purpose. I have even thinner cable. I forgot the exact nomenclature for it. I can look it up. But it's the really thin coaxial cable that you see with the SMA connectors. And actually, I have crimped SMA connectors on that type of cable also and have used it for a few connections here with receivers. So these are the types of cable I use, and I'm sure Roy might have a few other suggestions and recommendations, but that's what works for me.
All right. Thanks very much. Good answers there. Yeah, I started out with all LMR 400. That's when I was on, you know, all the UHF and VHF radios were on verticals, and I had a 10-meter vertical for a long while. And then when I started getting into dipoles, the LMR 400 would pull the dipole down too far and make it follow a V-shape. So I went over to LMR 195, and I think I'm going to stick with that for the high frequency because it's a long winding run. It's still on a dipole, and it's a long winding run. And the VHF and UHF, or the verticals, basically just a straight run down, a wide turn, and then a straight run horizontal. So, okay, thanks very much, Malin. Roy, if you have any suggestions, please come in. Back to net control.
AC2GS here. Yeah, I agree with everything that Malin said. Transmission lines, you might want to keep in mind open wire. Open wire is probably the lightest and has the least loss in the HF band. Ladder lines, window lines, and even the twin lines that were very common with television cables and such. You have to be a little bit more careful having them come near metal because they're not shielded. But otherwise, people swear by them, especially non-resonant doublets, which are basically dipoles that aren't cut to a resonant frequency and tuned with a in-check antenna tuner, often use open line because of the very low loss involved in them. As far as cable, let me drop it for a second. As far as cable, they come in all makes and models, as we all know. The usual standards tended to be RG58, which are very thin, and they can't carry too much power. They're very flexible. They're very light. They're very useful for short runs of low power. Then there's RG8X, which is an intermediate. It's a kind of medium, about a quarter of an inch in diameter. It's good for 100 watts, 150, maybe even 200 watts. It has less loss than the RG58, but more loss than the next one, which is RG8. RG8 was kind of the standard after World War II. It was about 4/10 of an inch in diameter and was relatively low loss and could take easily a couple of kilowatts. Nowadays, LMR is kind of the name that people use. It comes LMR 400, LMR 250, LMR 195 that you're using. It tends to be a little bit more low loss than the previous types of coaxes because of the double shielding and other aspects. Some of the models are less flexible. LMR makes an actual LMR Flex, which is a stranded core, which is a little bit more flexible, and a lot of times people will run regular LMR 400 to, say, a rotor, and then on the rotor attachment, they'll use a run of LMR Flex. Let me drop. I'm not quite sure about the LMR 195 for HF. I guess it really depends upon what frequency in the HF band you're operating and certainly how much power you're using. It's not going to be able to tolerate much in the way of wattage. If you go to the high end on 10 meters, you're probably going to get something like, I don't know, maybe about 2 or 3 decibel loss per 100 feet, which is significantly going to be more than the LMR 400 or even the 250. Yeah. So that's my 2 cents worth on transmission lines. 213 is a very good transmission line. A lot of people swear by it. It has a solid polyethylene core, whereas LMR has a foam dielectric. The problem, though, in some cases with 213 is that instead of it being solid plastic, it's designed to be a spiral. So there is an air channel that runs through it. So if you don't weather protect it correctly, you can get water in it. as opposed to the LMR 400, which is more resistant because although it's foam dielectric, it's closed cell foam, so it's less likely for moisture to collect in it. So you pick your poison. Most of these things are great in their place. Some are better for UHF, some are better for HF, some are better for QRP, and others are better for using with a linear amplifier.
Okie doke, okie doke. Yeah, I had switched from the LMR 400 to the LMR 195 because it was hauling down the dipole. But now that I'm using this G5RV suspended on the three poles, the ladder line comes all the way down to the hand railing on my deck and transitions to the coax now. So the weight issue is, well, it's not an issue anymore. I suppose I'll just go over to LMR 400 for everything. And now I keep forgetting the type of ferrite choke that has to be used. Could you tell me that again, Roy?
I believe it's MIX 31. I'd have to kind of double check it. If you go to places like DX Engineering, that's the only ferrite material that they sell. If you buy things in eBay, even if they're labeled the correct mix, I'm never quite sure if they always deliver what they say they're going to deliver. So although it might be a little bit enticing to cut your cost and get it shipped from China, I think I'd go with more of a local company that stands behind their stuff.
Comments?
Yes, Milan.
We'll go to Charlie. Well, most places sell actually ferrite cores, so you can actually go to one of the distributors, which will give you actually a lot cheaper prices than some of the places. One of the best places I have found is arrow.com, and they actually have very good shipping terms, and they ship very quickly. They typically overnight things to me whenever I have orders, so if I place an order today, I would get it tomorrow, and it's quite amazing. Let me drop. Now, ferrite has several different types of materials, and you can see them on their website. They have the old 31 type material, which is good between 100 and 300 megahertz. I think I'm saying it wrong. Let me look it up.
Between 1 and 300 megahertz.
Yeah, there's material 31 material, which they say 1 to 300 megahertz. There's the 75 material, which is 200 kilohertz to 30 megahertz. Then there's the 61 material, which is 200 megahertz to 1 gigahertz. They have the economical 46 material, which is 25 megahertz to 300 megahertz. So from those, you probably want 31 or 75, depending what band you operate in.
Joe, any response?
Oh, sorry, net control. Yeah, I'll look into that. I had bought ferrite cores some time ago without even specifying the core material, and it did work. I had a problem with a 220 megahertz rig that was coming over the intercom system in the house, and I put half a dozen cores up near the antenna, and it stopped that. And as Roy had pointed out at that time, that I was playing Russian roulette. Just happened to get lucky, so I wrote that down. I will be looking up ferrite cores 31 and 75. So Milan, thanks very much. Back to net control.
More comment?
Yes, Milan, make your comment.
So if you want to really see all of the types of cores, rather than depending on the distributor and what they carry, I actually recommend you go to the ferrite website, and they actually have everything that's possible from them. And they have a lot of options. They have some that are solid cores, where you have to run the cable through it, or they have some that you snap onto the cable. So if you've already put connectors and stuff, you can snap them on existing cables. And they also have all the dimensions, which is very useful to see exactly what length, thickness, and what cable you can get through the thing. With technical diagrams, by the way, and full specifications. So if you really want to see all the possibilities, of course, from ferrite, which is one of the major producers that we have here, I recommend checking that out. And I have an earlier comment, actually, about the ladder line. Roy corrected me that I did omit it unintentionally, but I actually used ladder line as well in the past, especially to my loop antenna, which a very good feature of that is it's really low loss, it's really cheap, and it's really light. So if you're looking to build some sort of multiband antenna where you know you're not going to have perfect match on all bands and you know you're going to use a thinner, ladder line or window line are very suitable. And the type I used was 450 ohm window line that uses 16 and AWG stranded copper conductors and is rated at 3 kilowatts, sold by DX Engineering, but there's other places where you can buy it, it's not just them. So that's also an excellent choice, but keep in mind that the window line and ladder line is a balanced type of line. So if you have a balanced antenna, you can connect it directly to that, but you will need a balance to go from the balanced system to the unbalanced system. Now, whether that's one-to-one balance, if you're doing a match system where the impedance is matched, one-to-one would be fine. Or you can use one-to-one choke also, even if you're using something else. It doesn't hurt, actually. I had to use both 2.5-to-1, I think, in one-to-one at some point to make sure that I don't get the RFI in the shack. So you can use that certainly for part of the run as well, and it's very versatile as long as you keep it away from metal. And by away, I mean a few inches away from metal. And by the way, that one is insulated, so you don't, you know, it can touch metal. It's just you don't want to run a lot of metal in parallel. So for example, I had it actually enter the shack through the window and it just closed the window on it, and, you know, it was fine like that. Kilo Golf
2
Charlie, back to
Max. AC2GS. Very good, Milan. So hopefully every aspect of your question was covered tonight, Joe, right?
Yes, yes. I mean, ladder line is a possibility in that situation that Milan described. But yeah, I have my G5RV, the full sizer up there, which uses ladder line as the matching section. And I have that completely in the clear, coming down from the center of the dipole down to the handrail on my deck, just completely in the clear, and that's working out very well. And I'll have a vertical also, and when I get my station set up, I'll be able to have a coax switch inside. Presently, when I want to go from vertical to horizontal, I run outside and swap cables, and so I'll stop that carnage. So, yes, everything, all my questions are answered. Milan, thanks very much. And back to net control.
Okay, very good, Joe. Again, this is AC2GS, and this is the Kings County Radio Club's Technical Net. Is there anyone out there who has a question or a comment for the Technical Net at this time? Please give us your name and your call sign.
This is WK9K, Joe Omilbeason, supporting the net. Good evening.
Hello, Joe. How are you doing tonight? Do you have any questions or comments or any experiences you'd like to share about transmission line tonight?
No, I have no questions on the transmission lines, although I did learn quite a bit by listening in on this net, so I thank you for that. Though I do have a question. It's not so much of a technical question as it is a call sign question. You see in my call I have a 9 in there. A couple of amateurs have brought up the fact that I had a 9 and I'm in a 2 zone. So they got me thinking about changing my call to a 2 call. What are your thoughts on that? Does it really matter if I have a 9 or I have a 2? I understand the jurisdictions of it all, but what are your thoughts? Because, you know, I'm still fairly new to the hobby. Roy, you've been around for a while, quite a while. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, it's a matter of wanting to fit in, I guess. If you don't care, then, and you like your call sign, I would say keep your call sign. Historically, the numbers were divided among the United States. One was all the way up in Maine and Vermont, two was New York, three was Pennsylvania, and bits of New Jersey, and on and on. Nine is usually Wisconsin and Illinois. Up until recently, I'm talking 10, 15 years ago, if you moved from one region to another, you couldn't keep your call sign. You would have to request the FCC to give you a new call sign with the proper area number. But they did away with that, and nowadays anyone, anywhere in the United States, can ask for any number area that's free, that isn't in use. And there are guys who walk around and talk who are have six numbers. Very often it's because they come from California originally. Sometimes it's a entree to a conversation of where you got your call sign. So it sort of depends. If you want to be kind of anonymous, then the quickest way to kind of be one of the guys is to have a two area number. But it's fine to have any area number. I would be confused by people who would treat you any differently if you had a different area number. But let's see if there's any other opinions out there.
Still above to Charlie.
Yes, Milan.
I agree with everything that Roy says, but I would also add first thing, WK9K is a very good call sign. I don't think you should change it. It sounds nice. It's very easy to pronounce. It's a keeper. And second of all, if you do decide to change it, I hope you realize that, it will be 2 years before anyone can get that call sign. There's some people actually intentionally getting amateur extra call signs that are 1x2 or 2x1, and then canceling them and requesting a new one just to keep them off from the pool. So, no code extras cannot get them. They do it maliciously, and there's people like that with dozens of call signs. It's unfortunate the system is like that, but that's how it is. And what Roy said about people being from call signs from different areas, when I was getting mine, I noticed that most applications for the area 2 code, the 1x2 and the 2x1, were not from people from the second area, it's just people wanting any sort of short call sign and not caring what area they get. Sometimes they'll cancel those and try to get something from their area, which is a little disappointing, because if they wanted something else, they should have gotten in the first place, I think. But yeah, that's my thoughts on that. Oh, and also, I think there's a lot of number 2 call signs in Florida, mostly from people who moved there to find better weather. Kilo Golf 2 Charlie, back to Matt.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys down in Florida who are retirees who are very happy to keep their 2 area number. So Joe, it basically it's what makes you feel comfortable. If you're fine with the 9, and I think personally you should be, then I think you should keep it. If at some point down the road you find a vanity call sign that suits you better, then so be it. I was considering a vanity call sign when I got my call sign, but for some odd reason, I just liked the sound of it, and so I decided to keep it. But, it's free. It's one of those odd things. The FCC used to charge different amounts at different times for a vanity call sign, and as you well know, they just decided it was too much trouble doing the bookkeeping, so they made it free. So, whatever suits you, I would consider your feelings a thousandfold more important than any other guy on the band talking to you.
This is WKNK. Thank you for that. Thank you for the input. I like the call sign. It's funny, my young daughter, I have an 8-year-old, and when she heard I was looking into different call signs, she was fighting me tooth and nail. And I wasn't looking for any reason other than I had a couple of conversations in the past where it threw people off that I was a 9. And not a 2. So I guess jurisdiction-wise, when they were making a contact with me, they were thinking I was in one place and I was really in another. But I like the call sign. I like how it flows. I think it's easy to pick up on HF. I never really had a problem there in the sense of the call sign. And same thing with checking in with like Limock nets and things like that. When I've checked into that, and they always have pile-ups of call signs, I've always got plucked out of that stuff as well. But no, I appreciate the insight, Raimalan. Greatly appreciated. So this is WKNK. I'm gonna sit here. I'm gonna listen in on everything that you guys are talking about, and I'll jump in if I have any questions. Back to the control.
Okay, very good, Joe. I knew a few hams who were big dog lovers. They were thinking of getting something in their call sign that had a K9, but I don't think they ever did. So, you know, just use your call sign proudly. That would be my advice, and it would be Malen's as well. Again, this is AC2GS with the Kings County Radio Club technical net of tonight, and does anyone else have any comments or questions or statements for the technical net tonight? Please give us your name and your call sign. Okay, perhaps we should go to our TechNet puzzle for tonight, and after the TechNet puzzle, if anyone comes up with any questions, we'll address them there. The TechNet puzzle for tonight is reasonably straightforward. The question is, what's the difference between AFSK and FSK? And your choices for answers is AFSK is advanced FSK, or B, AFSK is the amateur equivalent of FSK, or C, AFSK is audio FSK, or D, there is no difference, just different names for the same darn thing. So that's the question out there. Anyone want to step up and give it a try?
KC2, WTA.
Joe, what do you think is the answer to tonight's puzzle?
Well, I know that it stands for Audio Frequency Shift King, and I read about it some time ago, but I'm fuzzy on it. So I I know what the initials stand for, but I don't know exactly how it works. Back to net control.
Okay, Joe, you're quite right. It's Audio FSK. Frequency shift keying is a mode of transmission in which the carrier itself is shifted a certain number of cycles for different values. A radio teletype, RTTY, uses a binary system. They shift the frequency from its initial carrier by 170 hertz. And that's the alternate signal, and it works like ones and zeros in any binary signal, and the ones and zeros are transcoded into a text. That's the origin of a frequency shift keying, and actually a caller ID on your phone still uses frequency shift keying signals being sent to it. In the past, though, the amateur radio companies felt it was easier to simply implement it as a audio frequency injection. So what apparently they do is the carrier is altered not directly at the transmitter, but a 170 hertz cycle audio signal is modulated into the carrier, causing the shift in frequency secondarily. It's easier for them to manufacture. They don't need any special circuitry, and it's easier for them to adjust. So that's the onset of so-called audio frequency shift keying. And I know that Milan has been using this technology and has been reading up, so I would like to hear what he has to say on the subject.
Okay, thank you, Roy. This is Kim. Well, you can start thinking from it even before shifting the frequency of CW, where you have one oscillator and one frequency. And you can, you know, just add a second oscillator, the second different frequency, and switch between them. But that gives you some problems because they won't be in the same phase exactly. To make sure that they're in phase, the easiest way is not to use two separate oscillators, but to use one oscillator and change the frequency on the oscillator for different times to create the signal, which is what Roy was talking about when you do a radio teletype, RTTY. And this technique, by the way, you can use it for very high speeds. The example that Roy was giving with the Dutch phone, DTMF signals, that uses 1200 baud for the data rate, which is a very slow rate by today's standard, but at the time was actually a good rating. The first modems actually were 300 baud, so 1200 baud is not bad as a comparison. And the convenience, as Roy stated, for the 1200 baud, you can very conveniently fit it within any type of radio transmission, FM, AM, single sideband, it will fit in all of these. And it's used a lot in amateur radio like that. There are satellites where you can send text messages and other data in emails that way, or position location to satellites and have that retransmitted. Or you know, you can do it terrestrially as well. Let me drop. The problem is, what if you want to increase the baud rate? Well, you need more bandwidth, and if you want to use AFSK, and more bandwidth than actually what we're allowed to use in amateur radio typically. So the answer to that, actually, if you wanted to do 9600 baud, which some radios have, most of the Kenwood FM radios, the base station ones, and actually some of the HTs, the FT2DR from Azu certainly has it, and a few other radios, you can look that up, have 9600 baud TNCs in them. And what that uses, if you wanted to, you know, use an external device to connect to that, you cannot use audio, because that won't fit in your standard 3 kilohertz passband. So actually, when you want to do a faster rate, you have to go back to good old FSK in order to accomplish that. So then, as I discovered, you need to connect the TNC to the FSK ports of the radio to be able to use that higher data rate, FSK for 9600 baud. So 1200 FSK, which is the most popular and used in most applications in amateur radio, you can do as audio or you can use as FSK. Digital modes like PSK, that's a different topic, but digital modes like RIDI, for example, you could do AFSK or FSK, certainly. Most radios support either of the options, but for some options like 96 baud communications, like AX25 packets, you actually, the only way to do it is FSK. It just cannot be done in audio. Can we go to Charlie, back to Matt.
Very good. Thank you very much, Milan. And that's a good synopsis of frequency shift keying. For people who are interested in all manner of things, there's also something called phase shift keying, which Milan touched on very lightly. And there are even more esoteric things called quadrature amplitude modulation, which is one of the things that are used in digital voice modes. So there's all kinds of interesting ways to modulate signals. It's not all just simple AM, FM, and PM modulation. So any other comments or questions about this topic tonight? Okay, does anyone else have any questions or comments for the Technical Net tonight? Okay, I guess we're having a bit of the lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer here. People are elsewhere. I'll give you one more opportunity if you have any questions or comments for the Technical Net, and if not, we'll kind of call it a night. But anyone out there who has anything that they'd like to say before we shut this thing down?
KC2, WTA.
Yes, Joe.
I was just about to answer before, and I accidentally hit the frequency button and wound up on the LimeWalk computer net. So I'm back. I listened there for a couple of seconds, and I'm back now. And just in the way of a comment, for the second year running, I tuned in on field day, and I couldn't hear anybody from our club. But I did make one contact during field day, a unique contact down in Florida with a big radio club. And they were running emergency power, and they were giving 5E. And so I pulled my plugs, and put them over in the emergency power socket and started running the high-frequency rig on solar power, and I made a contact with them and gave them a 1E. So that's my comment about field day, this year's field day. Back to you, Net Control.
Okay, very good. The Kings County Radio Club had a good field day this year. Mitch tells me that he edited it up. It was almost 800 different contacts. The problem is, and the good and the bad is that everyone was on the air simultaneously. So it was kind of difficult to figure out which of the many, many, many signals across the band might have been KCRC. So, you know, you got out there and you gave some guy a point. That's a good thing. Anyone else with any war stories about field day?
They will follow up.
I think you were doubling with someone, but Joe, give me your follow up and then we'll ask who the other person might have been.
All right, I just wanted to add also that was made, that contact was made on 10 meters on 28.327 at 1:30 in the afternoon, which is kind of strange. The band usually collapses by then. So, all right, Net Control, back to you and the next call-in. Casey to WTA.
Okay, very good. You know, 10 meters is a strange place these days. You kind of think you have it figured out, and all of a sudden it opens up, and then it closes, and then it opens up. I mean, I know people who talk on a 10-meter net at night, which this time of the sunspot cycle is highly problematic, but if propagation is just your way, you might get away with it. So let me ask if there was someone else who was doubling with Joe, please tell us what you need to say.
We'll go to Charlie.
Yes, Milan.
Oh, I just wanted to mention that I was able to hear KC2RC. I heard the club on 20 meters. I didn't hear them on the other bands, but I heard them both Saturday and Sunday, and they were pretty loud coming in here, actually. It was a strong signal. And I know that James, who was operating at the time, was able to hear me even when I forgot to turn on my amplifier, and I was using, I don't know, somewhere between 5 and 10 watts, I guess. They were hearing very well, let me say that, from that location. I'm sure the band was really crowded for them. For me, actually, it wasn't. I had lots of space between the stations I could hear, which I know that's not feasible. There's many stations there, just I was not able to hear them with my antenna. And I was a little bit disappointed by that, but that's why I chose to stay at home and test it, so I, you know whether it hears, and it doesn't hear very well. People were able to hear me just fine, of course, because I used the full power of my amplifier, 1.3 kilowatts, but I need to work on my receive. I'm not sure what I'm going to do about it. But the club actually sounded strong, and they were hearing well from that location if they could hear me with 5 to 10 watts on 20 meters.
Very good. They had a fan dipole up, and James brought his vertical, which I don't know if I misheard Simon on the 2-meter club net the other night, where it sounded like he said it was 40 stories high, which is 400 feet, which I don't even think James could get away with. So I think the vertical was more like a... I don't know exactly how many feet, but I really doubt that it was 40 stories.
I don't know. Maybe he meant 40 feet, although that wouldn't be a very high vertical. I'm actually building a 40-foot vertical soon. I ordered the mast for that, which is a 41 or 43 or something like that foot fishing pole, and I'll just run a wire on that, and that will be my portable HF antenna.
Very good. I think James's vertical was basically aluminum poles he stacked together, and it was probably more like 110 feet, because I know it wasn't 43 feet, which is a kind of a standard size for an all-in-one vertical, so it was a big one, but it wasn't quite as big as it seemed on the other net, but everyone apparently had loads of fun. Very few were bitten by mosquitoes, which is a good thing. And I'm sure we're going to start making plans in July 3rd meeting for the next field day. So once again, this is AC2GS and the Kings County Radio Club's Technical Net. Anyone else have any questions, comments, statements, whatever they want to say before we roll this up and shut it down? Okay, very well. This net has been brought to you by the Kings County Radio Club. Our club is an ARRL-affiliated club based in Brooklyn, New York. We meet on the first Wednesday of each month, but our next meeting will be Tuesday, July 3rd, sometime after 7:30. We offer a pre-meeting technical question and answer session, much like this net, from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. as time allows. We have a weekly 2-meter club net on every Tuesday at 9 p.m. on this repeater, as well as a 10-meter net every Sunday at 11 a.m. on 28.380 megahertz upper sideband. This technical net meets on the second and fourth Wednesdays of each month at 9 p.m. We have a weekly net featuring Yaesu's Fusion Digital Technology every Thursday at 9 p.m. on our club repeater, KC2RC. If you can communicate using Fusion technology, please join in. We offer an audio stream of the Fusion Net on the internet at stream.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club. Once again, an application is available on our website. If you would like to contact the host of this technical net, please address your email to tech@kc2rc.com. We maintain an active website at www.kingscountyradioclub.com or www.kc2rc.com. which offers archives of this technical net, amateur radio news, original articles, and technical forums. Please visit our website and participate. Our website services were generously donated by the local Brooklyn-based web hosting company 3 Alien Web Hosting, who we would like to thank. As the great philosopher Jimi Hendrix once said, knowledge speaks, but wisdom listens. So try to listen a bit more and talk a bit less. It's time to roll this all up and shut this all down for now, but we'll be back to do it all over again on July 11th, and you're all welcome to join us. Thanks to all the people that participated tonight, and especially to Malen KG2C. Without you guys, I'd just be talking to myself. So this is Roy, AC2GS, going clear and getting the heck out of here. Until next time, guys, be safe for the 4th of July.
7-3, Roy. Thanks for another great net. Kilo Golf 2 Charlie will be clear.
Thank you, Roy and Malen. KC2 WTA.